Okay. Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Sukkos is daf Sadi Gimel. We're on the bottom of Sadi Aleph Amud Beis, and the story is going to go like as follows. Obviously, we're behind. We're going through a number of cases in the Gemara of mortgages and selling property with a guarantee, and so that's going to continue to be our discussion until today's daf. The Sadi Beis Amud Beis. Thankfully, it's going to be shorter, so hopefully it'll give us an opportunity to catch up. And then Sadi Gimel and Aleph, we started the Mishnah, and that's going to deal with the topic of bankruptcies. You'll see what I mean when we get there. Let us continue where we left off. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf Daf. Okay, we talked about mortgages, and we talked about the creditor's ability to, because he has a lien on a property, to collect that mortgage. We talked about the creditor's ability and right to go after not only the borrower, but also after the yisumim as well as of the estate as well. And so it gets a little bit complicated, and by the end of this discussion, it'll get even a little bit more complicated. But in the meantime, however, let's pick it off where we left off yesterday. And Amar Rami Bar Chama. We are on the very bottom of the... No, I'm sorry, Hawa Gavra. Yeah, good, I know I left off by number four. Okay, good. Okay, this is story number four. Not stories, I mean, they're stories, but I'm saying they're all case studies. Hawa Gavra does Avna L'Ksuvasa Di Mebetov Asana. So a man sold his mother's Ksuva. Okay, already, that's a chutzpah. And it's such a... and really, think about what needs to happen in order for the son to be able to collect his mother's Ksuva. Number one, mom has to collect the Ksuva, and that's not a guarantee, meaning mom only is going to collect the Ksuva either if A, dad dies before she does, or B, dad divorces her. But if neither of the two happen, if she dies before dad, so then she's not going to collect her ksuva. So that's number one. That's risk number one. Risk number two is that then he has to inherit it from his mother. So in other words, then mom has to die, and then he's going to inherit it from his mother. So really, when you factor, take all these things into account and factor, so there's a tremendous amount of risk when you're buying that kind of paper from somebody. That is a very risky piece of paper to buy. Good. So that's whenever you purchase paper, so you take the risk into account. In other words, you factor and determining based on all those risks, that's how much you buy for that piece of paper. So how much is the son going to sell for this piece of paper? Obviously very little. That's why the Gemara describes it as selling it for Tova Sana. Tova Sana, okay, that doesn't always mean the same thing. In the context of this Gemara, it just simply means a little bit. In other words, whatever he can muster out of that kind of piece of paper, selling that kind of piece of paper, so that's what he sold it for.
Does that assume that the husband is dead?
No, the husband's...
They live together without the ketubah.
No, he's just selling the rights of collection.
I see.
In other words, she'll. All right. I mean, okay. How gaver dezam leksuvas di mebitovas anav amalei e asya aim umaarel lamafetzilach. Okay, and he threw one more thing to take into consideration. That's the following. He says, "I'm going to sell you this piece of paper, but with no guarantee whatsoever. Let's say mom hears about it and she goes crazy." Right? You did what? You sold what to him? No, that's my ksuva. That's not your ksuva. And I absolutely, I protest the sale. So the son says to the potential buyer of this paper, he says, look, you have to assume all the risk, and you have to assume that risk as well. So again, it's not a big deal. It's just another consideration that goes into the value of this piece of paper. Obviously, makes it even a bigger risk. Obviously, means that it's going to be worth less. Okay, fine. So shchiva ime velo irara. So as it comes out now, mom collected her ksuva. In other words, the husband either died or divorced her, and then mom died, and she died without saying a word. Meaning, son sold the ksuva. Okay. Mother never said anything. So now this guy who sold the ksuva, he says, look, mom never protested, but I'm protesting on behalf of her. Right? Not right. It's not right what I did. Yeah. So Rami Bar Chama says, you know what? I think he has a legitimate protest. Now, that position is very hard to hear. It's hard to defend. Obviously, you know, Rami Bar Chama felt that way. So, to a certain degree, we have a right and responsibility to defend that position. But it's very hard to defend that position. Meaning, he's the one who sold the note. And then afterwards, now he can protest the sale of that which he himself sold. In other words, and he said, look, if my mother protests the sale, so then that's it. you're left high and dry. But she didn't. And now he's going to protest the sale, and Rami Bar Chama says he's standing in the place of his mother. It's a very hard position to defend. And Amale Rav, and Rav says to Rami Bar Chama, Nehida Achraisi Daka Lo Kabel Aleha, Achraisi De Mi Lo Kabel. So, and Rav says, oh, no, look, not here. Meaning, you told the buyer that he's not going to be protected against mother's protests. Fine. But you never told him that he's not going to be defended against your protests. And so Rav says, there's a clear delineation between you and your mother. Your mother had the right to protest that sale. You don't have the right to protest that sale. The sale is a valid sale. And therefore, the buyer that of that paper is going to be able to collect that paper. Next, Amar Rami Bar Chama Reuven Shemachasal Shemesh Lo Ba'Achrayos. Okay, I told you it's going to get a little more complicated, and here we are. Reuven sold the piece of property to Shimon without any guarantee whatsoever. Selling property without any guarantee means as follows. It means that Reuven's telling Shimon, look, I got creditors. Okay, anytime you go through a title search, so that's what you're looking to discover. So Reuven says to Shimon, look, they're out there. I mean, obviously, I plan on paying them back. Don't get me wrong. But I got creditors out there. I'm going to sell you a piece of property. And they may come and they may collect that piece of property. And there's no recourse. You cannot come after me if that property is taken away from you. So Shimon buys that property. Now, why in the world would Shimon do that? Why would he buy a piece of property with no recourse whatsoever? So again, it just simply may be factored into the price of the property. That he's buying the property with risk involved. Fine. So Reuven sells Shimon a piece of property. Shalom b'achrayos with no guarantees whatsoever. Now Shimon turns around and sells the property to Reuven b'achrayos, meaning let's assume we're talking about the same piece of property, obviously. In this case, I say obviously. So Shimon turns around and sells the property back to Reuven and with a guarantee. Now what's going on? Meaning why would Shimon do that? What's the motivation here? So I can only imagine. I don't know. It's hard to understand why Shimon would do that from a business standpoint. What did he gain by doing that? Unclear. But anyway, but that's what happened. And the Gemara is really just setting us up now for the following. So now, along comes the creditor of Reuven and takes the property away from Reuven. Okay, because Reuven's defaulting on the loan that he owed the creditor. So now the creditor said, good, so I'll take the property. Now, think about this, because this is now going to really bend our mind. So now, Dino Huda Azo Shimon Mefasilei. Now, really, the truth of the matter is that Shimon now could step in. Because think about it now from Shimon's standpoint. Shimon now is at the point of exposure. Because when Shimon sold the property to Reuven, Shimon sold the property to Reuven with a guarantee. And that guarantee says that, look Reuven, if that property is taken away from any Baal Chov, so that means that you have recourse against me. And so I now know that once this property has been collected from you, so you're going to go after me and you're going to have look for a reimbursement for me. Now, obviously, it bends the mind over here, because who's coming after Reuven? Not some sort of outside creditor, but Reuven's creditor is coming after Reuven. And so now Reuven's going to get a reimbursement from Shimon for land that was taken away from him from his very own creditor. Okay, it really bends the mind. So, but that's exactly the point of the Gemara. Dino hu dazo Shimon mefatzilei. So Shimon now is within his right to have to go to speak to the creditor and try to deal with the creditor. And because again, Shimon now is at a point of exposure if the land is successfully removed from Reuven. So Shimon's now going to have to suffer that loss. Amalei Rava. So Rava says once again to Rami Bar Chama, it's too mind bending. This is too much to conceive. Nehida achres da ama kabal alay achres and afshemi kabal alay. Look, it's true that when Shimon sold the land back to Reuven, it's true that Shimon said, "I'm selling it to you with recourse, so that if a creditor comes and takes it, so you can come back after me for a reimbursement." That part's true, but I'm protecting you from outside creditors. I'm not going to protect you from your very own creditors. That's crazy. And according to Rava, that's not only crazy, but that wasn't part of the deal. That wasn't part of the transaction. I'll protect you from other creditors, but not going to protect you from your own creditor. So fine. So the Gemara says, so under those circumstances, again, Rava disagrees with Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama it's too much of a chiddush. Umoda Rava, but Rava says, but here's one place where I will grant you. And that is the following. Reuven Yerushalayim Yaakov. Okay, so we're going to deal now with a scenario which is very similar, but the story starts one step earlier. Reuven had the land, but Reuven inherited the land from his father Yaakov. Umachru l'Shimon, and now Reuven sells the land to Shimon. Shimon, in this case, is not Reuven's brother. Shimon just simply means somebody else. Okay? So he's a stranger. So Reuven sells the land to Shimon, Shelo b'achrayus, and once again, in the first sale of Reuven to Shimon, that was sold without any guarantee, no recourse. Ve'asa Shimon amachru l'Reuven b'achrayus. And once again, now the story is going to look identical to the previous story. Now Shimon sold the land back to Reuven, and he sold it with recourse. Fine. Ve'asa b'achov di Yaakov. But here now is Rava says, I'll grant you the following. Now comes the creditor. But this is not Reuven's creditor. It's Yaakov's creditor. And along comes Yaakov's creditor. And now Yaakov's creditor is going to come and he's going to take the land because, once again, there was a default on the obligation to Yaakov's creditor and there was a lien on the land. And despite the fact that the land went from Yaakov down to Reuven, good, that was a Yerusha, but that doesn't remove the lien. And therefore the creditor is still holding a lien on that property. So the creditor just follows the lien on that property down to Reuven and takes the land away from Reuven. Now Rava says, Dinu Hudazel Shimon Mefatzele. Now here Rava says, I'm going to acknowledge that under these circumstances, remember, Shimon sold the land back to Reuven with recourse, with a guarantee. And now the land is being taken away. But not from Reuven's creditor, but from Reuven's father's creditor, Yaakov. You may have made the following argument. Yaakov and Reuven, although they're not the same person, but they're basically the same person. Because when Yaakov dies, Reuven inherits. An inheritance can be viewed as just simply an extension of the parent. And so what you may have argued is that this is not an outsider creditor. This is an internal creditor, meaning it's a creditor against the family and the family estate. And so therefore, just like Rava said previously, when Shimon sold the land back to Reuven, Shimon says to Reuven, I'll protect you from outside creditors, but not from internal creditors. Here, the argument you could have made is, this is really considered an internal creditor, to which the Gemara is now saying that that's what Rava is going to concede. That in this case, Yaakov's Balchov, Yaakov's creditor, is not Reuven's creditor. And so therefore, when Reuven now is, when Reuven looks to lose the land to the lien holder, so now Shimon has the responsibility to step in and say, hey, wait a second, not so fast, because if you do that, then Reuven's going to come after me, and I don't want that to happen. So then Shimon can intercede on behalf of Reuven. My time, Abachov Yaakov, Kabachov Damadame. And the Gemara says it very succinctly, much better than I did, and that is that this is Yaakov's creditor, not Reuven's creditor. It's considered Acher, it's considered like an external creditor, and therefore Reuven will have recourse against Shimon, and therefore Shimon can intercede on behalf of that property. Now, by the way, when I say Shimon's going to intercede, what does that mean? It means basically that Shimon ultimately Shimon is going to be at liability over here. So either Shimon will have to negotiate with the creditor, maybe try to negotiate down the debt, or just simply pay him off. One of those two. Amar Rabbi Bar Chama. Okay, continuing. Reuven shemachar sadel Shimon b'achrayus. Okay, again another case. This is in my count. This is number 6. So Reuven sells the land to Shimon b'achrayus, and the land is sold to Shimon with recourse. Fine. In other words, it's a guarantee. V'zakaf alav b'milva. Now, Reuven, upon selling the land to Shimon, Shimon says, "Look, I'm buying the land." And the sale is going to be a good sale. Just the only problem is that I just don't have the money right now to pay you. So how about this? How about I'll borrow the money? Meaning I bought the land. I sell from you. But in terms of the money, so we'll just simply convert the purchase price into a loan, and I owe you. And obviously he writes him a note and he gives the note over to Reuven. Okay, so the Zaka love alav b'milva umeis Reuven. Now Reuven died. The asa b'achov de Reuven v'katar flemi Shimon. So now Reuven dies, and along comes the creditors of Reuven, and the creditors of Reuven go ahead and they take the land from Shimon, because once again the creditors had a lien on property. And we're going to have to say over here that when Reuven died, he simply had no properties left over. Obviously. The rule is very simple. Once you have properties on you, on your person, so then the creditors cannot go after after sold properties. Even though those sold properties do have a lien on it, but the rule is, Allah is very straightforward, and that is that a creditor, a Baal Chov, cannot go after others while you yourself have any properties. So over here, Reuven, both before he died and after he died, had no properties on him, so therefore the Baal Chov had no other choice but to go ahead and to collect the land from Shimon. But Katar Flemi Shimon, Upaisa Bezuze. Now Shimon said to the creditor, okay, hold on 1 second. Reaches into his pocket. How much did he owe you? Okay, fine. And so now he settles the loan. Okay, good. So now Dinahu de Armale Bnei Reuven. So now the case gets interesting. The children of Reuven go to Shimon and say to Shimon as follows. Look, Anan metalti shavik avuch kabach. Our father had metalten by you. Now remember, Reuven sold the land to Shimon. Shimon didn't have the money to pay, so Shimon owed the estate. Good. So in other words, the estate had a receivable against Shimon. And now the kids are saying to Shimon, look, that's money you owed our father, that's money you owe us. That's metaltalin. Now we know, the halacha is that when it comes to movables, there is no lien of the... There's no lien that is created against movables. Yes, but the land was not in the possession of Reuven. Reuven sold the land. So what Reuven now, the only thing Reuven was giving over to his children was just a receivable.
The stream of payments.
That he got for that land. And that receivable is going to be paid in money. Good. So it was a loan. So Shavak Avuch Kabach Matalta Diasma Labachov Lamishtabde. Now you know the halacha is that's money, and there's no lien on that money. There's no shibud on that money. And so therefore, look, it's all nice and well that you paid off the creditor of our father, and I guess thank you. I guess. But really the truth of the matter is that you could have given us that money, and that money would have been protected from the creditor. Because the only thing the creditor has the right to seize is property. We have no property from our father. Our father left us no property. The only thing that he left us with was money, and in this case it was a receivable, but again, a receivable is money. That's the only thing that dad left us. So the truth of the matter is that really what you should have done is you should have given us the money, and that money would have been protected. And you didn't. So the kids are basically saying to Shimon, you know, you're still on the hook to give us some money. Amar Rava. So Rava says, Ipikeach idach. So Rava says now, Shimon can, in this particular case, not outsmart the kids. I don't want to present it that way. But basically, working within the rules of halacha, Shimon can not have to not only lose the money but lose the property as well. He could still retain the property. And how would he do that? Magbeleni ale ara. So he says, look, Shimon says to the estate, to the kids, look, you're right, you're holding a receivable against me. That part's true. And you're right, I should have just given you the money. That part's true. But you know what? I owe you. So I'm going to pay you, but instead of paying you in money, I'm going to pay you in property. Now, generally speaking, by loans, the preferred method of payment for loans is money and not with property. Okay, but over here, he says, it's in my better interest that I'm going to pay you back with property. So here you go. Here's the property I'm going to pay you back.
Could there be a kinyan with that?
Huh?
Could there be a kinyan with that?
What?
That's an exchange. There's no money transacted. It's just a loan. He can't do it.
Yeah, but he's paying back the loan with value. The value happens to be, in this case, property. Fine. So he pays him back with the land. Now, he pays him back with the land. Now, what does it mean regarding the kids? It means regarding the kids that now the kids have property. And not just property, but property that really was once upon a time their father's. Meaning, and the father had a lien on that property. Because, again, Shimon owed Reuven money. And Reuven had not only a receivable, but he also had a lien. So now, what the kids have is property that goes back all the way to the father. So, and now what Shimon can now do is say, look, Oh, that's interesting now. You have a collectible asset, you have property, so now Shimon can go back now and take the property. And now Shimon can go back and take the property based on the following rule. So if the Yesomim, if the orphans, collect property as a as payment for an obligation to the father, so now when a creditor can come and say, look, I've had a lien on your father's property. Now it happens to be that when he died, the property was not in his possession. But if somebody goes and gives back property to the kids, so that's viewed as property that was once owned by the father, because the father previously had a lien on that property, and so now another creditor can come and can take that property away. Okay, so basically now Rav is saying on behalf of Shimon, look. Right, the money you should have given over to the children, you didn't. You went ahead and you satisfied another creditor. But what you can now do is you can now give the property over, but use the property as payment for your obligation to the kids. Now the kids have the property that's viewed as dad's property, and now Shimon can go ahead and collect back that property.
Can he have the choice of giving land instead of money?
Generally speaking, money is preferred. In fact, we saw that the other day, but If it represents a significant loss, in this case it would, to the borrower, if the borrower had to pay back in money, so then the borrower can use the option of paying land to pay back a loan. Generally speaking, however, money is the preferred method.
And how can somebody just selling his land change his loan to a metalded? You know, like that's what he did. Shimon sold the land to somebody else, and as a result, he made the loan without any recourse. How can you do that?
I'll tell you what. Come afterwards. We'll talk more about it afterwards. Okay. But more about this case. It's for sure, by far and away, of all these cases, that's by far and away the most complex scenario. Okay. Amar Rava Reuven Shemachar Kol Sedotav LeShimon. Okay. Case number 7 over here. Reuven sells all of his properties over to Shimon. Okay. Reuven has his creditors. Obviously, all these stories have creditors involved. Reuven has his creditors, so obviously they have a lien on that property, and Reuven sells every parcel of land that he owns over to Shimon. That point's important. And also we're going to make another point as well, which Rashi makes over here, which I'm going to just highlight. And that is, all this sale was done in one transaction. One transaction, one shtar. So now basically, when Shimon buys all Reuven's properties, you know what Shimon becomes? To a certain degree, Shimon becomes Reuven. In the following sense. Meaning the Baal Chov had a lien on the property. The Baal Chov had a lien on Reuven's property. But now that Reuven sold every single one of his properties over to Shimon, now basically, as far as the lien is concerned, the creditors now have a lien on Shimon's property. Now I'm making a big deal about this. I'm making a big fuss about this because if Reuven did not sell all of his properties over to Shimon, so Shimon now has an exit strategy, and it's a very easy one. It's a very good one. Shimon says to Reuven's creditors, look, don't come after me. Meaning, right. Well, in other words, the halacha is very clear. Creditors can only go after sold properties only if there are no properties on hand. When Shimon says, if when I bought the properties, I made sure that I left over one or two pieces of property to satisfy his outstanding obligations, so those are the properties that I left over, and therefore you cannot come after me. And even if he subsequently sells them, but when I bought the properties, they were free and they were clear and they were available. Fine. So, but in this particular scenario, now that Shimon buys every property of Reuven, so now in this regard, Shimon assumes the role of the property owner vis-a-vis the creditors. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Reuven Shemachar Kol Sedotav LeShimon V'Chaz V'Shimon Amachar Sadachas LeLevi. And now Shimon sells off one of the pieces of property over to Levi. And here comes the creditor Reuven, and he's coming to collect. So now he has a choice. He can go after Shimon, or he can go after Levi. Now, that's not normally the case. Meaning, if let's go back to Reuven and Shimon. There's no choice. It's not, you know, you can go after Reuven, you can go after Shimon. No. If Reuven has property, you can and only can go after Reuven. You can't go after Shimon. But over here, however, Shimon bought all the properties from Reuven because Shimon's a lokeach. Shimon sold one of the properties to Levi, the creditor has no greater or weaker claim against Shimon as he does against Levi. They're both lekuchos. They're both buyers of the property. And because Shimon bought all the properties at the same time, so now Shimon can no longer say, look, I left something over. He didn't leave something over. Okay.
I mean, for that matter, they could sell the property 100 times over again. But the idea is that the guy maintains the lien no matter who how many times he buys.
Correct. But right. And the other idea over here is that Shimon can no longer say, look, I left something over, because he didn't leave something over.
Well, he leaves something over if the creditors have 100 times more.
Of course. We're talking about where the obligation can be satisfied by only one of the properties. That's granted. V'lo amar nela d'zavna beinunis. Aval zavna idis v'ziboris matziamar lei l'hachi tachiv v'zvini ara d'lo chazi lech. Before I explain these last two or three lines of Gemara, just one thing everyone needs to know in order to appreciate and understand this. Creditors get paid back with what kind of land? You know, lands are graded on three grades, right? Edis is the best land, Bainus is the middle land, mid-grade land, and Zeboros is the worst land. Now, are those objective grades? Are those subjective grades? So when we get to the fifth parak of Gittin, we'll discuss that a little bit better. Not that I'm promising clarity on that issue, but okay. But in other words, let's just deal with a very simple three grading system. When you're a creditor and you're coming to collect, which land are you entitled to? The Gemara in Gittin says you're entitled to Beinonis. You get mid-grade land.
But it's relative, right? It's based on what the guy...
Again, is it whether it's subjective or objective is not perfectly clear. The Gemara in Gittin entertains two options, if I remember correctly. So not perfectly clear. But anyway, so the... So Beinonis is where the creditor can collect from. So let's say Shimon, who bought all the lands from Reuven, then goes ahead and starts selling off. And if he sold off the best land and the worst land, the Idis and the Zeboris. So now Levi says to the creditors, you know, my friend, don't come after me. Because I understood what happened. I understood that Shimon bought all the properties from Reuven. And I specifically went out of my way to buy lands that are not normally collectible to the creditor so that the Beinonis would stay by Shimon and therefore do not come after me. And Levi also has one other argument up his sleeve, and that's the following. If, when buying the land from Shimon, he specifically calculated that there are creditors, there's outstanding obligations, there are lien holders on that property, I'm not buying all the Beinonis from Shimon. I'm going to buy just some, leaving over some Beinonis by Shimon. So once again, Levi will tell the creditor, I specifically constructed my purchases so that there would still be Beinonis by Shimon, so that you can go and collect your Beinonis from Shimon. So once again, if Levi calculates, and Levi just does a little bit of planning, so he can protect himself from the creditors, leaving Shimon the full exposure to the creditors, and leaving himself protected from the creditors.
But if the Beinonis is available to the creditor, why can't he go against Levi's also?
Well, but Levi says, I specifically did not buy all the Beinonis because I left over Beinonis for the creditor. So in that case, he can protect himself from exposure.
Provided that whatever Shimon has is still enough to satisfy.
Again, the provided. Agreed, of course.
If the guy has several properties that he sold, is there an order yesterday where the lender can go after
the lease? First thing the lender has to go at is available properties on hand of the...
He's got to go after the buyers. Let's say that the owner is bankrupt, nothing.
Right.
He's got to go after the buyers. So the question is that if he sold several properties, does he go after one who bought it first, or the...
Generally speaking, the one that was the latest by the borrower himself is the one that the last property sold is the one that he goes after, because that was the one that was most recently available to him. Generally speaking. Okay, Amar Abaye. Okay, we are on Sadi Beis Amid Beis. Two lines down. Reuven shemachar sadeh l'Shimon ba'achrayos. Reuven sells a piece of property to Shimon and he sells it to him with a guarantee. V'asabachov de Reuven v'katar flimineh. And the creditor of Reuven comes and he goes ahead and exercises his lien on the property and takes the property back. Dino de azal Reuven umafatzi alei. Now, Reuven can intercede. And now, who's Reuven over here? Reuven is the borrower. But Reuven right now is not the owner of the property. The owner of the property is Shimon. But you understand, though, of course Reuven has a vested interest. Of course. Because once the property is taken away from Shimon, Shimon has recourse. Shimon bought the property with recourse. So Shimon's going to go after Reuven. So now Reuven is perfectly within his right to go to the creditor and say, wait a second, hold on one second, before you take the property away, let's sit down, let's talk. Let's restructure the loan. Let's, in other words, Reuven is perfectly within his right and ability, and if ability, but perfectly within his right to go take up with the creditor. And the creditor cannot say, V'lo matzi amar le la bal dvarim didi at. And the creditor can't say to Reuven, stay out of it. Meaning, who are you? You're not the property owner. Shimon's the property owner. I'm going to deal exclusively with Shimon, and you butt out. Of course, Shimon's going to have issues with you later, but that's not my problem. My issue is that I am owed money. I have a lien on property. You're useless. Forgiveness to Reuven for saying that. But you're useless. You don't have any money. So I'm going to go after my property, and then afterwards, if Shimon comes to you, that's your problem. To which the Gemara says, that's not a valid argument. Reuven can be a baldin. Reuven is considered a litigant in this case, and Reuven can go and successfully defend himself if he can. Mishum de amarle de mafka mina alai. How dervi? De mafka mina alai hader. Because and the Gemara says because Reuven has a very simple argument in terms of why he is a litigant. I'm a litigant in this case because once you take the land away from Shimon, Shimon's going to come after me, and this is a very easy relationship to look to see. And so therefore, I am considered a litigant, and so he's a bal dvar. Okay. And again, all this means is that Reuven now, to the best of his ability, is going to have to restructure the loan, satisfy the loan if he can, something along those lines. But the Gemara goes now one step further. Let's say Reuven sold the land to Shimon, but with no achrayas, no recourse whatsoever. Fine. So Shimon buys land, giving himself tremendous risk and exposure. And along comes the creditor, Reuven, and Reuven takes the land away from, the creditor takes the land away from Shimon, as he rightfully is entitled to do so. Now, here in the second version, we're going to say a chiddush. Even in this case, Reuven can interject. Reuven can go to the creditor and say to the creditor, hold on one second, slow down, let's sit, let's talk, let's try to negotiate.
Now
he has no connection, that's exactly why it's a bigger chiddush. Now he has no connection to land, why should that be? Because what's going to basically happen now is that Shimon's going to have issues with me. Now again, Shimon bought the land with no guarantee, and Shimon obviously opened himself to risk. But what's going to happen now is my creditor's going to come and take the land, and now what? Now, next time we get together on Shabbos at Shul and at the Kiddush, so Shimon's going to tell somebody else, again, I know no, we shouldn't be speaking Lashon Hara, but Shimon's going to tell people, you know, watch out for Reuven, because I bought a land from Reuven, and along came his creditors. Now, again, I'm obviously I'm at fault over here. I bought it with no recourse, and I bought it at risk, but Reuven assured me that he was going to pay back the loan, and don't worry, and everything is going to be great, and everything didn't turn out great. And so basically what Reuven's his credit rating, his general confidence in terms of his transactions are going to go way down. And so therefore, Reuven, because of his reputation and the hit that his reputation is going to take, even though he has no actual financial liability over here, but if he wants to, he can intercede based on the fact that he wants to protect his reputation. Amar Abaye. Reuven shemachar sadeh l'Shimon shel ba'achrayos v'yatzo alav asikin. Reuven sells a piece of property to Shimon, and now in comes the asikin. Who are the asikin? Rashi gives a one-word explanation. We're now on the very top of Sadi Gimam and Aleph. Arir Orerin. They're the people who are contesting the ownership of the land. Meaning, when Reuven sold the land, it may not have been Reuven's land to sell. And it's not perfectly clear whether he legitimately, rightfully, was the owner of that land. And so here comes now people who are going to be contesting his ownership. But now, who's the litigant? That's not the focus of the Gemara. Although that could be that in of itself is also a perfectly legitimate question. So now Shimon's thinking to himself, what did I just get myself into? I just bought a land and now we're having a dispute of whether or not Reuben owned the land altogether. And this is what I just walked into, and no thank you. So the Gemara says in the name of Abaye, this is a halacha set over by Abaye, that until he does chazaka. Now remember, chazaka comes in two forms when it comes to land. The one that more that is more popularly known, and the one less popularly known. The more popularly known form of chazaka is when I squat on a land for 3 years and it goes uninterrupted. Okay, that's the cheska sabatim. That's not what we're talking about over here. Okay, chazaka over here just simply means a proprietary act, meaning a form, a method of acquisition when it comes to land is just a simple proprietary act. I go into the land, I work the land. That's a proprietary act. I make a border around the land. That's a proprietary act. This is a method of acquisition when it comes to land. So, achelo hichzikba, yacho lachzerbo. If he didn't do a proprietary act, so then he can be chozer, he can recant on the sale. Meaning, even though, what did he make so far? A verbal agreement. Reuven, it looks great, everything looks fantastic, I want to buy the land. And I'm ready to say they shook on it, but shaking on it also may be some form of kinyan, maybe like a form of kinyan suitor. So, but anyway, they made, let's just keep it simple, they made a verbal agreement that he was going to buy the land. But now, oh no, here comes the people saying, you know, Reuven never owned the land really belonged to us, he bought the land, but he didn't really buy the land. And now, it's questionable whether or not Reuven owns the land altogether. Shimon can walk away. Shimon has the right to walk away from the deal, even though he made a verbal agreement. Now, in halacha, what is a verbal agreement? It's significant. It doesn't make a transaction, but a verbal agreement. In other words, generally speaking, you gave your word in halacha. You're not bound to keep your word, but you should keep your word. But over here now, it's perfectly within his right to walk away from the deal. However, once he does a proprietary act, which effect formed a transaction, so now he can't recant on the deal. Because Reuven could say the following to Shimon. You know what you bought? You bought a bag of nuts. Bag of nuts is an expression the Gemara uses to describe a very risky venture. Meaning, when you buy a bag and it's sealed and it's got a whole bunch of nuts sealing it, and sight unseen, you say, you know what? Whatever the contents of the bag is, that's what I want to buy. Good. So you know what that's called? It's called the sale. In other words, when you knew of the risk and you bought it anyway, so you assume the risk. So here Reuven could say to Shimon, that's what's going on over here. So Chaita Dekishri Sava Vikabilt. The Gemara now just gives us a basic halacha. What is considered a proprietary act? Mechidaisha Mitzri. When he goes around the border, Mitzri over here, the word Mitzrayim actually means borders. When he goes around the border and he starts actually constructing a perimeter around the land, that's considered a proprietary act, which makes him now the owner. Ikedamri Afilu. Now, I'm sorry. Pause for just a moment. What kind of argument is that? Meaning, why is it that Reuven has a legitimate right to say to Shimon, you know, you bought the land with risk and you assumed all that risk? Meaning, he did assume some risk, but all the risk? Abaye is saying the following. Once you are buying a land and you are basically, you know, when you invest, you check off a box, you know, you're open to, you know, you're comfortable with risk or you're not comfortable. So basically, once the land is purchased, shaloba achrayus, that already is like the check off of the box saying, yeah, I'm okay with risk. So once you check off that box and say, you know, don't worry, don't come after me. If creditors come and take the land from me, I'm not going to come after you. So that means now that you have a healthy exposure to risk. You're okay with risk. Additionally now, after the proprietary act is done, so now basically Shimon no longer can go back to Reuven. Shimon can't say to Reuven, hey, wait a second, you may not even own the land. I have to assume that risk as well? Abaye says, yeah, that's exactly the point. And makes the next piece of Gemara even harder to understand, and certainly more, it's certainly interesting. Igadami afilu ba'achrayus nami. And some are of the opinion that even if the land was sold without chayos, which is normally how land is sold, meaning normally land is sold with recourse, so that if in the event Reuven's creditors come and take the land, so Shimon's going to go after Reuven, and Shimon's going to say, okay, do me a favor, give me a reimbursement. Even here, if the land is sold with recourse, and now along comes a group of people, and they say, you know, Reuven never owned the land, you know, we're the owners of the land, even still, once the chazakah was done, once the proprietary act was done, the land is owned by Shimon. Now, if the Orim do in fact successfully argue that the land never belonged to Reuven, and then they assume ownership of the land, so then of course Shimon's going to go back to Reuven, and Shimon's going to get a full reimbursement of the land from Reuven. That's what makes this discussion interesting. It's not a mekach taus, right? All right. So that again, that's I understand that point. It's an excellent point. It makes it a bigger chiddush.
It's never a transaction to begin with.
Agreed. Okay, I understand. It's a bigger chiddush. Okay. The Amarle Achve Tirfech Vashal Lech, because Reuven will simply say to Shimon, "Look, land was seized by you. You know what? As we discussed already yesterday, you write a note over to the buyer saying that the land was taken from you, lawfully taken from you, and then with that note you go back to the seller and you look for a reimbursement." Okay. Sadi Gimel Amud Aleph. We start the Mishnah. Okay, good. Today's daf. It's exciting. We're starting this Mishnah. This is going to be a difficult Mishnah. Yesterday and the day before, it's a popular Mishnah, the one we're about to see. Popularized. I don't know if you've heard of his name. His name is Professor Yisrael Alman. Very, very, very. Yeah. He came to Boca a couple years ago. Anyway, he's a Nobel Prize winner. He's a mathematician. So anyway, so an hour and a half he spoke about this Mishnah. I'm an hour into the shiur. Okay, would have been better if I finished the shiur by today. But I'm an hour. Admittedly, I'm an hour into the shiur, and you'll see. It's a tough Mishnah. From a mathematical standpoint, it's really tough in terms of calculations. We'll learn the Mishnah and I'll present it as best as I can. If you want, I'll share with you the link to a shiur. You have the patience, you have the time, you have the mind power, right? Everyone here does, but he's very clear. He presents in a very his explanation in a very clear fashion. But anyway, okay.
That's
No, you don't need a Nobel Prize to understand this Mishnah, but you'll understand the problem. The problem with the Mishnah is very intuitive and very instinctive. Immediately you'll react to the Mishnah saying, "What just happened?" What he does rather brilliantly is he explains that there is a rhyme and a reason and a logic behind the Mishnah. In other words, the Mishnah can be explained mathematically. Okay, let's see the Mishnah together. Misha Yanasri Shalshnashim Ames. Okay, so he's married to three women and he dies. Okay, so he's got three widows on his hand. Now, you have to say over here to understand the Mishnah, otherwise there's no conversation to be had, that he married them all at the same day. Now, I said the other day you can't do that. And I stand by that statement. You can't marry more than one woman in one day, right? Ein marvin simcha b'simcha. But it could be. Look at the first Rashi in the Mishnah. Rashi just simply writes, "Ushloshem nechtemu biyom echad di betlasa yomei hakodemus b'shtar kodemus begivui." It could be that just simply the contracts for all three ksuvos were signed on the same day. Okay, look, it's a detail. It's an important detail, but let's not get lost in this detail. Okay, he became obligated to all three women simultaneously. Close that discussion. Close that sentence. Otherwise, we're not having a discussion. Okay. Umes and the man dies. So now all three of them are coming after him. So, like I said in the beginning of today's shiur, we're basically now going to be dealing with bankruptcy because his funds are exceedingly limited, and the outstanding obligations against the estate far exceed the estate. And so now it's a very simple question: how do we distribute the limited resources to all those who are obligated? And each woman was given a different ksuva. Now again, how did he negotiate life, marrying three women, and each one of them giving a different ksuva? Okay, in other words, I don't know how it worked out while he was alive, but he's no longer alive, so I no longer have to think about it. But now each one of the women are coming, and each one of them have a different size ksuva. One's 100, the other 200, and the third a 300. Ve'inchem elamane. Now his estate only has $100. I'm going to just say the word dollars. It doesn't matter. So now each one of them is holding a note. Again, each one of them is one holding a note of 100, the other 200, the other 300, and the only thing left in the estate is 100. Here we are going to be dealing with the easiest of the three cases of the Mishnah, Cholkin B'Shava. Good. Each one of them walks away with 33 and a third, because each one of them has an equal right to that 100 mana. And here we go, and here's where things get complicated. Not complicated, just difficult to understand. Hayusham Asayim. But let's now go to a scenario in which he dies leaving an estate with 200. Again, the construct of the cases are all the same. Three outstanding ksuvas against the estate, represented by three women. And again, 100, 200, 300 is the ksuvas that were written for the three women respectively. And now he dies and he leaves an estate of 200. How is that 200 going to be divided by the three women? So, Shalmana Nolos Chamishim. So the one who has a 100 ksuva is going to collect 50. Shel masayim v'shel shalosh meo shlosha u'shlosha shel zahav. And the 200 and the 300 note holder against the estate are going to each collect 75. Now I know the Mishnah doesn't say 75, but zahav is a dinar zahav, which is equivalent to 25. 25 times 3 is 75. Each one of them, each of the remaining is going to get 75. Now, if you apply thought to this most to this case that we just went over, you say to yourself, how did the Mishnah arrive at these numbers? These numbers are very hard to understand.
Now, they didn't do it the first time.
Huh?
The first one.
Correct. In other words, what should have happened, now, I have Rabbi Alman going, Professor Alman going through my head right now, so he repeated this a number of times. There are multiple solutions in terms of how to divide this this estate. There's not one way to skin a cat, there's not one way to divide the estate, and each one of them has a claim. But certainly the idea that that first 100 should 50 of that first 100 should go to the one of the women, that's very hard to understand. Meaning, of that first 100 of that estate, so that should be divided equitably, like the Mishnah told us in the previous case. Mm-hmm. Okay, that part's hard. Next, Hayusham Shalosh Meos Shal Mana Not Los Chamishim Shal Masayim Mana V'Shal Shalosh Meos Shisha Shal Zahav, and then the Mishnah goes through the third case, and the third case for sure is even more difficult to just conceptualize. And that is, let's say there were 300 left in the estate. And again, same starting point. One woman had a note of 100, a second of 200, a third of 300, and there's only 300 in the estate. So the division goes like this. The 100 note ksuva, she gets 50. The 200 note ksuva, she gets 150. And the 300 note ksuva, did I make a mistake? Yes, I did. Okay, let me do that again. The 100 note gets 50, the 200 note gets 100, and the 300 note gets 150, and that's how the estate is going to be divided amongst the three women. Now, in terms of simplicity, in terms of just looking at the numbers, from the standpoint of each one of them is going to be receiving half of their note, that's lovely. It's you know, that's
the proportion is the same. This is
the most straightforward case, because it splits half. Everything gets half of what they're supposed to get.
Everyone gets half of what they get. But once again, if you go back to the drawing board and you look at each unit of 100, the first 100. I mean, again, going back to the first case of the Mishnah, that should be equitably divided amongst the three, because each one of them have an equal claim to that first 100. And then the next 200, only two women have a claim to. The next 100, only one woman has a claim to. And if you went in that kind of algorithm, you wouldn't be arriving at 50, 100, 150. Right. Again, I know it's a tough mishnah. V'chein gimel sheitilu lekis, and in terms of this kind of division, the Gemara says same thing in terms of a distribution from a business. In other words, if we went into a business venture and we had this kind of investment, where one invested 100, the second 200, and the third 300, so in terms of a distribution from the business venture, so you're going to work in the same type of formula. This is how it's going to be divided, both if it's depreciated or if it appreciates. Meaning, the loss or gain is going to be working with this kind of structure. Okay. Now, we'll I'm an hour into this year. Okay. Shamana not les chamishim tasa matasa v'tilsu with the isla. The Gemara is obviously bothered. We're now in case number two. And we'll just go through Q&A of this Gemara, and then tomorrow we'll pick it up. In the second case, what happened? So again, three women, each one having a note of 100, 200, 300. And the estate only had 200 to give away. So how is that divided? 75 and 75. Good. The Gemara says, no, not good. What are you talking about? The Gemara says, Shamana nolos chamishim, tilsa v'tilsa v'tilsa hu di isla. I don't understand. Each one of them, but specifically, we're really now talking about number one, she only has a third in that first 100. Because there are two other parties, two other women, who have an equitable right to that first 100. So what is she doing walking away with 50? She, the note holder of 100, should only walk away with 33 and a third. Amar Shmuel, because Sefer Balas Masayim, La Balas Mana, Dino Dvar, Mein Li'imach Memana. So the Gemara says, our Mishnah is talking about a very specific scenario in which the 200... Ksuva note holder says to the 100, you know what? I'm staying out of this. I want peace between me and you. I've always liked you. I don't want, right? Even though we were co-wives with one another, I don't want to have any gripes with you. Let's say it like this. I'm writing in a document that, or I'm saying, either way, seemingly either way, I'm not going to get involved in that first 100. I'm staying out of it. Good. Now, that first 100 now is only being contested by the 100 and the 300. Each one of them have an equal right to that, and therefore, that's going to be divided 50-50 between the 100 and the 300.
Why didn't you just give her
33
after that first
100? One second. Seifa, to which the Gemara says... Well, wait one second. So now think about what happened to the balance. What happened to the balance was that was divided 75-75 between 2 and 3. To which the Gemara says, why? The 300 should say to the 200, you know, you recused yourself from that first 100. So that first 100 should not come into consideration at all. And so now, look, that last, there's 100 left, which you and I are contesting. You're not contesting that first 100, you've recused yourself in that first 100. So now we're only contesting over that second 100. So you want to go 50-50 on that? That's fine by me. You'll take 50, I'll take 50. But now, as from the first 100, you recused yourself, I should get 50 from that first 100, and you should get nothing. Right? Makes sense. So, Mishum de Amr Le Midinu Dvarmu de Salika Nafshai. So the way Rashi understands this, she's saying, she, meaning the 200 says back to the 300, no. I didn't recuse myself from that first 100. All I didn't want to do is, I didn't want to fight with the 100 note holder. I liked her. I didn't exclude myself from that 100. I just simply said, I'm backing away. Not my right and entitlement to it. I just simply won't fight with you. I won't argue with you. But I still have rights. So I'm not excluding myself. Once she takes 50 away, whatever's remaining, I still have a share in that. I still have an entitlement to that. And that's why that last 150 will be divided 75 evenly between 2 and 3. We're not finished yet, obviously. We still have more to go, but thankfully we almost caught up.